All right, we are at Perek Zayin, Halacha Day. We are at, today is the 6th of November, 2018. It is Election Day, and it is also the, where are we, the 6th of Mar Cheshvan, Tafshin Ayin Tes. So the Halacha Day was a little difficult, especially once we already used up the most obvious Halacha from here, and that is the issue of carrying, the issue of the issue of carrying something from one domain to another. Every malacha is learned out from the Mishkan. So what is that learned out? Where do we learn that one out from? So the Gemara says that because when they used to collapse the Mishkan, they used to hand over one board to another, and the Levium had them on these wagons, which are described as being contributed over the course of this parak. So that would have been a great thing to talk about. We already talked about it a couple of weeks ago at the end of, as Halacha Day for Parak Dalet. But there is one specific halacha that is mentioned over the course of this parak, and that is having to do with that, and that is when it's describing the wagons here. I neglected to bring a Torah Tamima with me, but the Gemara comments, how do we know? Oh, it describes carrying the Aron, so they carry the Aron on their shoulders. So the Mishnah and Masechta Shabbos actually learns that how do you know, generally speaking, when we learn a when we do a malacha, some malacha has to be done the normal way. If you do it in an unusual way, if you do it as a shinoi, so then that is, it seems, so then that is not, at least that is not an isur d'oraisa. So what is carrying with the shinoi? What is, how unusual does it need to be in order to be considered carrying? So uncarry, so I'm a righty. I normally carry things with my right hand. Well, what about if I carry a book in my left hand? So is that considered a significant enough shinoi? What do we think? No, right? People carry in both hands. What about carrying things in a pocket? Also, that's a normal way of doing it. What about carrying things on one's shoulder? So the Mishnah says that we learn from this parak that carrying something on one's shoulder is also an issur d'oraisa. That is considered a normal way of carrying. How do we see that? Because it says that the Levium would carry, or maybe the Kohanim, depending on whether you pass like the Rambam or the Ramban, but whoever was carrying the Aron, the Pasuk tells us, would carry it on their shoulders, and the other Kalim were carried on their shoulders. The Mishnah says, aha! You see from there that carrying something on someone's shoulder is considered a normal way of carrying, even though all their hands are free. That is not considered a reasonable shinoi. That would still be considered prohibited. So carrying a knapsack would not be considered carrying with a shinoi. That would be considered an isur d'oraisa of carrying. Yeah.
You say carry on your shoulders and say it's free. You're talking about a knapsack or something. Normally, if you put a satchel or something over your shoulder,
yeah, you're still in your hands. Okay. So it doesn't matter. But here, even a knapsack, so that would be considered a problem. Which, well, the truth is, carrying the aron, I don't know, they carry it just on their shoulders? It says they carry it on their shoulders. Well, did they hold it also? Think. But maybe not. If they did, so then Sam's got an interesting question. Right? Because that's not what was done in the Mishkan, just carrying something in a knapsack. I didn't think that through. It's a good hara. You'd also need to prove that that is a that the Levim didn't use their hands, which I don't know. I mean, I know in the pictures they're all walking like this, but
balancing, right? It's on their shoulder, but they're balancing.
Right. So even that, maybe that doesn't even count as carrying. If you take it down, you'll probably be okay for a little while anyways. I mean, the main thing is on the shoulder, not on the hands. Okay. So we'll talk about, I figured we'd talk a little bit today about things that one is not permitted to carry when there is no Erev. What qualifies as something that could be, other than one's flesh and blood, what else can one walk around with on Shabbos in the absence of an Erev? It does happen every once in a while. What?
Clothes.
Oh, so one second. We'll have to close in a second. It does happen every once in a while that the Erev is down. It does happen every once in a while that people find themselves in a neighborhood where there's no Erev. And many pointed out, I think there are a couple of shirim that I heard after Hurricane Sandy, and much of the Rabbanah here, we're somewhat used to probably once or twice a year our Erev actually ends up down, because we, you know, not that large of a community, and it and our Erev goes to some pretty wild places where it could get a little where it could be knocked down rather easily. But some of the Rabbanim commented that it was amazing. Like, people were getting these shilas that, like, pretty obvious, but people are just so not used to walk to not having an Erev that, like, you know, can I carry my child? Those types of things. So, all right, so you should always somewhat try to attempt to review some of these halachos somewhat regularly. So
but
the first issue.
In New York, there is no Erev.
In New York, there is no Eruv. Where?
In New York City.
So,
because of Rabbi Shapiro.
Okay, so Manhattan currently, your information is a little bit outdated. There have been a lot of several Eruvs put up over the course of Manhattan, and now most of them connect with one another. Now, not everybody holds with them. Not everybody agrees with them.
When he passed away, then?
Well, Rav Moshe, so you lived in the Lower East Side?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right, so the Lower East Side still does not have an Eruv.
Right.
Or at least if it does, it's people aren't I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure what the current status is. A couple of years ago, the Lower East Side still did not. But other areas like the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side, I believe the Village, and I believe they are contiguous. Washington Heights all have Eruv
now. The
last 10, 15 years. So the Lower East, right. So Rav Moshe has several tshuvas about Eruvin where he prohibits building one in Manhattan and prohibits building one in Brooklyn. Both of them currently have, but filled with machlokas. I mean, there are many that, there it's not unusual for a person to say, I don't hold to the Eruv, as well as some other places. What? Why did he prohibit? So his tshuva, as Rav Shechter once said to me when I discussed the Hilchos Eruvin Shaila with him, yeah, some of Rav Moshe's tshuvas on Eruvin are his most creative. So he held that these places were considered a Rishus HaRabim. They were considered, as we talked about the last time we did the Eruvin Shir, he considered them a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. And the standard string Eruvin, he wouldn't be usable. So he assumed that would be the case for Manhattan, that would be the case for Brooklyn. I'm obviously simplifying things very much. These are the first very lengthy tshuvas in Igros Moshe have to do with these issues. There's a major shaila out there as to why Rav Moshe would approve one. He did approve the one in Queens. Queens, I believe, was the first of the modern city Eruvin. He did approve that one in Queens. His Talmud was from Peretz Steinberg, who was still a Rav in Queens in Kew Garden Hills, and he approved it. Part of the reason is because Queens is surrounded on all four sides by highways, that there are pretty much walls between the Van Wyck Grand Central, Clearview, and Long Island Expressway. Those are all walled areas. So that's one reason why it's a little bit better. Another reason is, somebody pointed out to me, I don't know how you know, and it's certainly not in the books, this is part of the Torah Shebaal Peh, that when you send a letter to someone in Borough Park, what do you write on the address line?
Good luck.
What? Good luck. Brooklyn. And in Flatbush you write Brooklyn. And in Williamsburg you write Brooklyn. And you send a letter to Queens, the minhag is, you divide it up by neighborhood. So you send to my parents, you send it either to Flushing, Fresh Meadows, or Hillcrest, depending on what mood you're in that day. Or you send to Kew Garden Hills, you send to Forest Hills, you send to Kew Gardens, you send to Jamaica States. That's the minhag. I don't know why. I don't know how that developed. But in a way, and all those places have independent Eruvin. The Kew Garden Eruv is separate from the Hillcrest Eruv, which is separate from the Jamaica States Eruv, which is separate from the Hollywood Eruv, although they all do connect. But they are all separate Eruvin. So in a way, you're sort of separating smaller areas. So
what do people do in Manhattan?
So what do they do, or what did they do? Well, people that Shabbos can exist without an Eruv.
Right.
It just often means that women don't go to shul. I mean, they'll stay home with their children, or the husbands will go to an early minyan, and they'll stay home. And that would do what?
Yeah, you can't carry that.
That means you can't carry, right?
Absolutely.
So you have... There are these key belts. Maybe we'll talk about these. There are these key belts that they make, which means you carry your key. But when you have children, you stay home. I remember when my uncle was the rabbi in Springfield, when he was the rabbi in Springfield, Massachusetts. So we used to go there for Yontif, and my aunt in Yontif, you don't need the Eruv. So my aunt would go to shul, but she had young children at the time, and it was like she came to shul. It was the only time she came to shul. She didn't come on Shabbos ever. that was the way it was. Now there are still certainly communities that are strict about the laws of Eruvin. Generally, the non-Hasidish yeshivish communities are stricter about Eruvin than the Hasidish communities, and they don't hold of, you know, they, and that's the way you'll do it. If you look in Rabbi Ribiat's book, 39 Malachos, he has several pages where he says, you know, these citywide Erevin, even though I'll talk about them and I'll show you what they are, like they really shouldn't be relied upon, and there's reasons why not to rely on them. I sort of think of it as like Klal Yisrael has accepted this leniency. Like it just won't work. But Lakewood, by the way, I believe the main base medrash area of Lakewood does not have an Erev. The outposts that have been built, I think, all do. I'm not sure about all this, but certainly for many years, as Lakewood was developing, there was no Erev in the area right around the yeshiva, although it's grown, expanded much more since then. I think the new areas do have. Okay, so let's get into it a little bit. So the first issue that we have to deal with is clothing, right? So clothing is permissible. Why is clothing permissible? So the Aruch HaShulchan says, come on, give me a break. What's the alternative? The alternative is that people are not going to wear clothing. What? Right, so that's obviously not something that's going to be very practical. So here he is. Kevin Shiniz Barsha in the Aruch HaShulchan Simin Shin Aleph Sif Mem Ches. He writes, Kevin Shiniz Barsha Utsiyahi Av Malacha V'chayv Malach Skil V'shoy Chatzal L'chein Yishul Deo. We have to know what's carrying a burden as opposed to what's considered a burden versus what's considered clothing. So, and clothing certainly is not shaykh to call, you can't call it a burden. Dim Lokein Atu Yelach Arun B'Shabbos. That means you'd have to walk around naked on Shabbos. And similarly, accoutrements to the clothing, or jewelry, or decorations to the clothing, you wouldn't call that a masui either. So anything that is, and we extend that even a little bit further, but anything that is, so to speak, to the benefit of the body is considered permissible. That is, it's a little hard to quantify, but I think that anything that is considered for the body itself is considered permissible. So clothing is going to be okay. The belts, things like that, are going to be okay. Glasses are going to be okay. There's a little bit of issue with glasses, but Minig is certainly to be lenient on glasses or contact lenses or hats or earmuffs or things like that. So those are all going to be as those are for the benefit of the body. Even, and this gets into a little bit of a controversy, but even walking sticks is generally assumed to be okay, provided that it is an absolute necessity for you to use the walking stick. Right? If you cannot take a step without a walking stick, so that is then permissible to use without an Erev on Shabbos. Now, most people that use walking sticks could take a step without it. Therefore, it's really not appropriate. Maybe it's a little bit better to use the example of crutches. So if a guy has a broken leg and crutches and he can't get around at all without crutches, or even if you can hop, but you know, you're not really going to take a step without it, so then crutches, we assume, actually are permissible on Shabbos. Walking sticks, the same thing. Now, there's actually one of the... Someone asked about Rav Moshe Feinstein. We were talking about that before. So in Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva about walking sticks, there's actually one of these censorship issues. It was in his original responsa at it. He said, "I'll permit you to use the walking stick, provided that that's the only thing that you can't take a step without it. And you know, you live in Brooklyn, and it's only a Rishus Rabim de Rabbanon anyways." So, wait a second. That sort of undermines the whole issue there, right? So in the Igros Moshe, I believe, I didn't look it up there, I believe, in the original, that was published first in a journal, it actually says the term Brooklyn and Rishus Sarabim Darabanan, but in the Igros Moshe, it leaves out where the questioner is asking from. That it's doesn't make it clear that it's from Brooklyn. Rather, he just says it's a rabbinic Rishus Sarabim, therefore it's okay. So that's a little deep dark secret in the law in the realm of Hilchos Erevin. Okay, so that has to, and similarly some other things. So for instance, a bandage. So a bandage would be permissible. That is for the benefit of the body. A woman wearing sanitary pads is generally assumed to be permitted because that is for the benefit of the body, provided that it's not just. If it's like a sort of a light flow, so then you got some reason issue. But as I say, that's not for the benefit of the body; that's for the benefit of the garment that's underneath. So you have to sort of balance that out. Okay, so that is that's the first thing having to do with that. Now, can we extend that even a little bit more? So the Aruch HaShulchan has a famous paragraph here, which some people in this room probably would appreciate, and that is the issue of carrying weapons. So can one be permitted to carry a weapon without an Erev on Shabbos? So the Aruch HaShulchan says no. He says, V'alchein lo yatsa ish lo b'sayif afilu chagur v'masov. Even if you can't walk around with a sword, even if it's in one's like a sheath or something like that. He said, that's not permitted. That's carrying or walking around carrying something. But he says, if you're a soldier, it's permitted. Why would it be permitted for a soldier? Not because bikuach nefesh or any of those things. Because for him, it's his decoration. For him, that's considered jewelry or like part of his uniform, as opposed to an individual. An individual, it's not considered part of his uniform. Now, one could start playing around with that and say, well, what do you mean? If you live in the West Bank someplace, so like that's part of the uniform to get a pistol stuck down, you know, in a holster or something like that. So I would be hesitant to I believe there are those that are makel for people in that situation where it's really considered a dangerous thing. But I'd be very hesitant to say, oh, well, you know, today it's the style to walk around with those things. First of all, if it's a real concealed weapon, it wouldn't fall under this leniency anyways, right? The leniency is because that's part of the look of your garment in your station of life. But first of all, if it's concealed, it wouldn't apply. And even if it's not concealed, so the Mishnah itself is the one who makes the distinction between a soldier versus a non-soldier. So I would be very hesitant to say, oh yeah, but in the time of the Mishnah, regular people never wore these things. Really? I would think that the right to bear arms is probably more pronounced during the time of the Mishnah than it is today. So I would be very hesitant then to permit people to walk around outside of an Eruv with a firearm or anything like that on Shabbos. So if it's real pikuach nefesh, so maybe there's a little bit of room, but then, I mean, there's always an itza. Well, there's always another way of resolving the issue. If it's really dangerous, what's the other way of resolving the issue?
Home.
Stay home. Right.
But what about other people?
What do you mean, what about other people?
You're helping protect other yidden that go to shul.
I mean, you're the guard for everybody.
Right.
You want to stand.
Well,
I mean,
if
you live in a neighborhood without a shul, and you're going to be the guard and stand outside without.
No. But I'm just saying, like Pittsburgh, or let's say you go to a shul and you know that there are bad guys out there. And you're saying you can't. I'm serious.
So I'd be very hesitant to allow somebody to walk around without an Eruv. Again, this is only without an Eruv. Right, without an Eruv to walk around with a gun outside, I would be very hesitant to say it's okay. Now, if the guy's a police officer, or actually he is one can make a case if he's an armed guard and he's wearing, like, you know, the armed guard uniform and he's got and part of that is to wear a.
What about inside? What about outside? What if it's inside?
So inside's okay.
Off when he leaves?
Well,
that's okay.
So I think that's
there's
okay.
There's no thing about muksa.
So it's muksa if there's really no need for it, but I think most posts would assume today there's a need.
But that's the solution. You just carry it inside.
Correct.
And you leave it there.
What? Let's put it this way. I want to make sure to include everything. If a person assumes that it makes it safer to have a gun on the person, which I agree with you, but you know, just to put that out there, because there would be posts going to say, well, it's not safer, whatever. But assuming that would be safer, so it's not muksa. Right? Especially because you set it aside before Shabbos, saying, I'm going to be using this on Shabbos. So yes, so if a person needs to walk from out of the area or says, I want to be safe in shul, it's appropriate then to leave a gun in shul, in a very safe place, and retrieve it Shabbos morning, yeah. Or Shabbos eat whenever he's there. Okay? Good so far? So that's the gun issue. Another similar type of issue that the Shulchan Aruch itself raises, interestingly enough, is the topic of a prisoner and chains. That if it doesn't sound like, can a prisoner walk around with his chains outside the Eruv? It sounds like even like a ball and chains. Like, would that be okay to walk around with on Shabbos? So where's my little notes here? So, what?
If he escapes on Shabbos.
If he escapes on Shabbos, or if he lives in a...
Well, we're talking about...
He's on furlough, or if he's got, an ankle bracelet.
The prison doesn't have an ankle.
What? Well, often prisons are generally surrounded by
gates and barbed wire.
That's considered to be the Eruv.
What?
That's considered to be an Eruv.
Yeah. Now one might, if there's multiple Jews there, you might be obligated to make an Eruv Chatzeros to actually share food beforehand. That's like sort of a different Eruv and topic. But yeah.
It's a walled area. You don't need to.
Maybe, but they're probably not even, because it's really all owned by the government. If you're in a prison, you don't own your cell, right? The government owns your cell. They can kick you out whenever they want. No, so that makes it a private area that is not Jewish owned, in which case there's no requirement to have the box of matzahs be passed. Correct. Yeah, but it's a private domain. I mean, a private versus public domain is defined by natural barriers. It's not, you know. You don't say, oh, the government owns the post office, so you can't walk around in a post office on Shabbos. I mean, I'm not sure I recommend it, but I don't think one would make that that case. Okay? So with the ball and with the chain, so Shulchan Aruch says, right, Mishu Aser v'kavalim, if somebody's a prisoner, he's got these chains, paper raglav, mutter latzis behem, it's permitted to walk around with them. Why? The next says the Mishmarah, the next of lo kama malbush to derech halichaso hubas. That's the way he walks, Cain. Uvetelim him legabi aguf shehu lavish behen, and it's bottled to the body which he is wearing. Below chashin dilma nafal meragav. We're not concerned that it's going to fall from one's leg. So that is the that's with other types of accoutrement. Maybe that's the only way he'll be able to get around. That's part of his uniform. Would be okay.
The guy in chains.
Yeah. That's it's happened. What?
So you're not afraid that it's going to fall off, but he's certainly not going to pick it up if it does fall off. And the reason we don't allow certain things is because
you're afraid you might take it off and put it back on.
Take it off and pick it up.
Yeah.
If it's a ball and chain, he's probably not going to.
But
he'll probably leave it. No. But it's even walking around carrying it. It's walking around with it. That's an issue.
No.
It's not that it's off. It's on. It's attached to his leg. Can he walk around with it attached to him?
Yeah, for the ball and chain, I understand. But for a lot of prohibitions, it's because.
So there are certain things that are malbushim that we say it's best not to wear because they might fall off,
right,
and you might carry it instead. So a classic example of that is gloves. It's on my list to talk about later, but gloves is often put in that category as something that a person takes off their glove to shake someone's hand, so we're concerned he's not going to put it back on, and he'll walk around carrying this glove. So that's sort of a gezeira that's out there, even though Shulchan Aruch itself seems to be permitting some type of glove or some type of mitten. He seems to be saying that it's okay. That's before the minhag was to shake other people's hands. I'm not sure what, but you have to check when the shaking hands minhag began. Remember Mike Greenberg on Mike and Mike was very anti-shaking hands. He felt we should go back to bowing. I noticed also last night, Donald Trump doesn't shake people's hands,
no.
Right? That's a thing. But like he walks out to these things, he says hi to everybody, he keeps his hands to himself. I don't think I've ever seen a politician like that before.
Well, he's not a stand-up politician.
That's right, he's not a stand-up politician. Okay. Okay. So, all right, what else do we got here with regards to the these things? Okay, so then when it comes to things that are attached to the garment that aren't necessarily clothing. So are things that are okay or things that aren't? So if there is a functional attachment, meaning if something is a function to aid the way you look in the clothing or the way the clothing works for you, we assume that it's permissible. So for example, a tie clip. Another example would be the cufflinks, right. Another example would be collar stays. Right, collar stays as well. That is for enhancement of the garment, and therefore it would be okay. As opposed to if it is only for the garment. What would be an example of something only to help the garment, but not to help you at all?
A lapel pin.
What's a lapel pin? No, not. What do you mean? That's one of these things. No. That's not what I'm referring to.
Safety pin?
Nah, safety pin also. Depends why you're wearing the safety pin. Well, buttons are also buttons you're using. That's the only way you can wear the clothing. The example that's often brought down are like plastic covers for hats, things like that.
Yeah.
Or people wearing, like women maybe putting like a bag over their sheitel or something like that to keep that dry. So some said that it was okay, you know, that's just considered a garment. But others say, wait a second, that's not okay. You're not wearing a hat cover to protect you.
Right.
You're wearing a hat cover to protect the hat, right? And therefore there are those that that argue against wearing covers for the hats. Yeah.
Separate covers.
Right, if you have a separate hair, well, a separate cover for the hat,
yeah.
Right, those plastic things that are put on.
Ah,
so if you have a raincoat, right. So I believe that was the impetus to make those,
to
those massive hood raincoat things that people have.
That would be considered not carrying.
Right, once they're not carrying, then it's considered that it's attached to the garment, right? So things that are considered attached to the garment, even if you're not necessarily using it, are also considered okay. So for instance, the spare button. Now, I've heard there are those that are machmer on this. I think, I believe Rabbi Kaplan may have told people to take, like you have those buttons at the bottom of your shirts, right?
Extra buttons.
Yes, I believe he might have told people to cut them off. And at least in Rabbi Rubia's book, he's making on those. He said, that's part of the shirt. That's the way it comes. And you don't have to get upset with it. Similarly with shotness tags and other tags. And even things that aren't attached, like a what's called a dry clean tag, things like that. So that's you don't even think about them. That's just like part of the garment. You don't have to worry that each fiber within the garment is 100% necessary in order for the usefulness of the garment itself. What about sunglass clips? Right, if you wear, I've heard there are people that wear glasses. I used to be one of them, right? And then they had these clips that go on the glasses for sunglasses. Oh. I think I had one of those, and then it was soon after that is when I got my took care of my problem, and I think proudly gave those clips to somebody. But are those permitted to wear on Shabbos? What do you think? No. Anyone else want to take a shot at
they
it?
They protect you against the sun. It's for your person.
Assuming sunglasses are allowed to be worn,
right.
It's a good question. What? You'd say yes, right? I believe that is, even though it's attaching to the glasses, it's still for you. It's still for your benefit, right? So therefore, it's okay, as opposed to being something that is for the to protect the garment itself. There's an interesting issue about rolling up sleeves. Is rolling up sleeves okay on Shabbos, or is that considered like you're no longer wanted? So he raises an interesting idea here. He says that it's not necessary. You're only rolling up sleeves because you're hot and you want to roll them up. But if you had a short sleeve shirt, that would be even better. So therefore, he felt that that's not okay. That's not considered something that you want as part of the garment, and it's something you sort of want to get rid of. I don't know. My wife would not let me wear short sleeve button down shirts. That's not allowed in our house. Well, I shouldn't say it's not allowed for anyone above the age of 13. Short sleeve button down shirts. It's not allowed in my house. You know, white button down shirt with short sleeves. Not what you're wearing. You're wearing a rolled up shirt. So I believe that is part. I don't know. It's hard. I would think that it's part of the style is to kind of roll up your sleeves, and I think that it is okay. Another interesting shayla is out there. What about jackets? We're walking around with a jacket over the shoulder. I think that's okay.
That's okay. As long as it's over your shoulders.
What?
As long as it's over your shoulders.
Why? Why do you think it's okay?
It's a cape.
Yes, that's what I know.
Okay.
It's like a cape.
It's like a cape, but it's not. I mean, I can't. What?
Yeah,
so there is actually halacha. We didn't get into this, but there is a distinction that is made between garment-type things and non-garment-type things of wearing on the body. When it's a garment-type thing, a garment-type material, you can actually put it anywhere in your body you want. So in theory, if you want to take a scarf and wrap it around your head, right, that would be okay. As opposed to if it's a non-garment-type thing, it's not okay. So for instance, a helmet or something. So a helmet you can wear on your head, but you can't wear on your shoulder. Right, that would not be okay. But what about with regards to jackets? In theory, that already would make it sounds like it would be okay. You're wearing it over your shoulder. The problem is you're not even wearing it as a garment usually. People that wear it over their shoulder are generally wearing it because they want to get it to yeshiva or something in order to daven mincha, not necessarily because they want it as part of the style at that point. So Rekefet actually has a story that when he learned in Lakewood, Aaron Rekefet, when he learned in Lakewood, they were like discussing this amongst the chevra, could we, could not. Someone should ask Rav Aaron, meaning Rav Aaron Cutler. So he was like the young guy. He said, all right, I'll ask Rav Aaron. So he walked in and to his office, and he has this whole story. He said, Rav Aaron looked up, then I told him the question, and he said it. I won't say it in Yiddish. So Rav Aaron looked at him and said, it's 100% mutter, and I know this because that's what all the guys did in Slobodka. I didn't get into the Lundus or the Surya Shulchan Aruch, etc. He said, I know that that must have been okay. Oh, he said, that's what he did in Slobodka, and the altar didn't tell anybody not to. That was his point. And Rav Aaron said, Aaron Rekefet says, from there I learned everything I needed to know about the passing on of Torah, etc.
It's the same with the talis, isn't it?
What?
You can wear the talis.
Yeah.
In a place without an arrow, but you can't have it like folded over your shoulder.
Right. You have to wear it.
Right. That's what they also suggest. Yes. Yeah. A couple of other just things to throw out there. Number one, gum. Can one walk around with gum on Shabbos? Mm-hmm. So he actually thinks it's an issur d'oraisa to walk around chewing gum on Shabbos. Okay. So.
Why?
You're carrying the gum. Carrying the gum in your mouth. And you can't even say that it's a shinoi because that's how people carry gum. They walk around with gum in their mouth.
You can walk around eating, can't
you? Without a neirav, why? Who says?
You can't.
Not walk around.
You can't walk around.
You might be able to stay in one place and eat, but you can't walk around eating.
Okay.
So So he thinks that would be a problem. What about pushing someone on a swing or playing tetherball on Shabbos?
Well, it's not Shabbos
ticket. Besides, it's Shabbos ticket for the person you're pushing, probably. Would that be a problem? So he said, a tetherball, I hear a tetherball is an issue. He says he thinks that they're both okay because neither of them are. The issue of carrying is to carry someplace and put it someplace else, in a kira and an anacha. Here, it's the same. It's going to end up in the same place where it was originally. So therefore, you didn't think that would be a problem. And the issue of carrying IDs, passports, and things like that, so there actually is a ramah, which is unclear what he's talking about. We normally associate the Jewish star, the yellow star, with the Holocaust. The ramah, living hundreds of years before the Holocaust, says it is prohibited... No, that's not the right one. Where is it? There it is. The Rama in Shin Aleph Sif Chaf Gimel talks about Lomahai the Mechuber Lixos Rakvadavish Darkulios. If something is normally connected, it's okay. It says V'osan Agulim Yerokim Shegazer Hamalchu Shekol Yehudi Yisa Echar Mehem. Those yellow badges that the government said that all Jews have to walk around with on their garment. Mutter Lotzis Behen Afilu Einu Tafer Biksusa Rak Mechuber Sham Ksas. You're permitted to walk around with them, assuming they're a little connected. They don't have to be totally sewn in, but assuming they're a little connected, he says that that is okay. Now, a different question, the Ramah itself says that that is permissible. Now, there is a slightly different issue of what about if you need an ID card, or like in people who went to Russia and stuff during the Cold War, so they had to walk around with their passports all the time. So how do you get to shul on Shabbos if you need a passport? So most posts assume that the tzorach mitzvah, it's permitted to walk around, to do it with a shinui, and to carry it in an unusual way. So people would put it in their heads, put it under their hats, or put it in their shoes, and that's how they would walk around with it. There's a further question about what about tickets for high holy days and things like that, that people would the same thing be okay. So there, shuls try to avoid that, but that leads to another whole story from Eric Heffet, which we'll have to share another time. All right.
You mentioned plastic cover for hats.
Yes.
You also mentioned plastic bags. I can remember that Islam is not happy with a plastic bag. You can have
I think both are a problem if it's only to protect the hat.
Some people are lenient to.
Yeah, there are those that are lenient.
But never with a plastic bag.
Not with a plastic bag, only the cover. I mean, you could say that the ones that are built in, that's like a malbush already, if it's built in that way. But others are against it.
That's made specific for the
hat. Right, right.
You could be lenient. But
right, those are more. Right, people are more making with the ones that are fitted to the hat.
Yeah. There's a distinction between the two.
Right, those that say that it's okay would permit one that's fitted because that's like a garment. That's a look.
Yes.
Right, the look is to walk around with a hat covered with the plastic when it's raining outside.
No.
Yeah.
Obviously,